I'm Rick Moore, and this is Connections, a podcast connecting you with news, newsmakers, sports, and entertainment voices all over the North Shore, brought to you by Moynihan Lumber of Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, and by the Institution for Savings, based in Newburyport, with branches throughout the region. Well, now I'm really happy to be talking with Massachusetts Representative Paul Tucker, former police chief in the city of Salem, from where I know him. And Chief Tucker, Representative Tucker, welcome back to MSO.
Thanks very much, Rick. Glad to be back, and hello to all the listeners.
Thank you. We last saw each other about a year and a half ago. That I saw you was at the Essex County Jail in Middleton with Sheriff Coppinger, a new program being instituted there. But, boy, has stuff happened in the last year and a half. And I don't even know if we're going to get into COVID in this particular interview, but I have to start, Chief, with your reflections on Wednesday, because although Washington, D.C. is, what, 600-700 miles away, you know, every school kid in the country knows what the Capitol building looks like.
Yeah, I'll tell you, Rick, I had so many emotions as I watched in real time what was happening, and literally the assault on the symbolic buildings that are there and the symbols of democracy. And, you know, I had so many feelings coming back, and the history that's been made in that building. And I happened to mention on a social media post President Kennedy with the hope of a new generation, and President Obama talking about how we bind people together and not dwell so much on what separates us, and to see the Capitol figuratively and literally assaulted by people, particularly those that were claiming to be patriots, carrying Confederate flags and some of the vile and hateful T-shirts that they were wearing. I have so many thoughts about what's happening in a culture that allows this, not only this to happen, but where so many people, unfortunately, think that this is okay to be able to do this. And, you know, we really need to redouble the efforts to call out hate, to call out intolerance. You know, this was not a protest. This was an assault. And, you know, on so many levels, the Capitol steps have seen protests. They've seen the civil rights movement. They've seen anti-war protests. But to me, just the way that these individuals invaded democracy as it was happening, whatever words I can use beyond it's inexcusable, it's outrageous, and any other adjective that fits.
Representative Tucker, as we go along this week, you know, I watched the thing in real time too, because I was you know, interested in how the certification of the Electoral College was going to be handled. And I got to tell you, I actually got sick to my stomach watching that. I could not believe what I was watching. And you know, as you watch this and see that it's even worse than what we could envision live. What are your thoughts in terms of being a former police officer and a police chief, and the way that from what I've heard, like on NPR radio, is that the rank and file police officers inside the building were heroic, to say the least. But the fact that the whole security was just lacking to begin with. What's that say, Chief? How are you looking at that?
Yeah, I look at it, Rick, through two different lenses. One is the rank and file, the officers literally and figuratively on the ground that were trying to hold back this mob. And Officer Sicknick, to lose his life in the midst of that mob is just beyond a tragedy. I've also seen a number of the other video clips of officers that were completely outmanned, doing their best to try to hold people back, to protect the people that were inside the building. So that's one view. The second view is what appears to be the utter unpreparedness on the top levels. The intelligence that I understand that was given to the Capitol Police, that the upper level administration within the building and within the department, it seems like they ignored it. You know, that's 101. That's easy to be able to plan for a number of things. Not so easy to plan when you don't have any idea what was going to happen. But here it sounds like they had pretty much some really strong intelligence and some early warning. to be trying to mobilize the National Guard 5 and 6 hours into an incident, I would just hopefully and respectfully request that they do a really deep investigation as to what went wrong here. And that should not take away from the individual heroics of the police officers that were doing their best on the scene.
There was one scene that was a little disturbing with a police officer running up the stairs, seemingly running away from the mob and seemingly being afraid. And I read today, I think it was on the Associated Press, that in fact what he was doing was he was leading that particular group away from where the representatives and the senators were. So he was actually leading them away from, he was leading the way to keep everybody safety. He wasn't actually running away at all or being cowardly. And that's something.
Not at all.
Yeah, that's.
I saw that clip, and not only was it incredibly heroic, talk about thinking fast on his feet. I think that officer did a fantastic job. He saved that whole other wing going over where there were individuals inside, and literally led these protesters to an area where there was some backup, some reinforcements.
Uh-huh.
I thought it was incredibly brave, heroic, and incredibly smart of him to do that.
Yeah, and I didn't even think of that, but yeah, really, really quick thinking. Representative Tucker, as a police chief, were there times in Salem, and I'm thinking particularly around haunted happenings in October. Were there times when maybe, I don't know if you'd get a tip or whatever, but haunted happenings, of course, is off the rails now. It's so big. But was there ever a time in your career as chief where you said, okay, you know what, I think maybe I should give a call to the state police or talk to someone else, maybe the Peabody police or something like that?
Yeah, and I can think of several different times over the years, and I would say that, you know, although as the head of an agency, you like to think that you're as prepared as you can be and you have the assets to deal with it, you can't be too proud to ask for help. And I can think of a number of occasions in really large-scale situations. I can recall most of them around haunted happenings when we did have a pretty good force in place and needed more. And then I can think of a couple others on some really, really hot summer nights when things really kind of went very badly from a resistance and I don't want to say riotous proportions, but where it was really a close call of being able to bring order back. You've got to know when you have enough force to move forward, mm-hmm. and to take decisive action, and sometimes you've got to take a step back and wait for reinforcements, and that's, you make the best judgment calls that you can. And in Salem, we're very blessed to have a strong command staff. Some, you know, the officers, they're very, very good, very well trained. And but it really can be some really touchy situations, and we've had our fair share as well.
And I want to get to how that relates to the legislature as well in a minute. But the other thing I was thinking of, I don't know if the Massachusetts legislature will be involved in discussing what's going on right now in this country, just prior to the inauguration, but it seems to me, Representative Tucker, and I'm just lashing out here as a former teacher, that we failed in education. We have failed, and it seems that somewhere, maybe in this state, we need to have, maybe bring back civics, maybe have some kind of digital citizen course, so that people understand what the Constitution means. And I'm also surprised, and I don't know if you are or not, at the lack of understanding of the Constitution in Congress by some of these people.
Yeah, and I think you've hit on one of the really front burner issues, not only in education, but, you know, in citizenship and knowing our government. So to that extent, I'm very happy to say that last term we did pass a civics bill, and we put the structure in place for school districts to accept it, and we put some funding involved. I was actually on what's called the conference committee, where we ironed out the differences between the House and the Senate bill, specifically as it pertains to civics education. So I think that we are moving toward a very good place with that. You know, I see these interviews sometimes where they ask high school age and sometimes college and beyond, just some of the basic questions about the structure of our government, and many of these young men and women have not had it in school, and they're really kind of missing the, I guess the nuts and bolts of how the government works. And I think that with the legislation that we just put in place last session, and it's beginning to be ramped up this school year, I think we're going to begin to rectify that situation.
Oh, glad to hear that. We'll get back to that in one second. I have one other thought on Wednesday, if I might, Representative Tucker. I went to the Capitol building. I visited the Capitol building. Gosh, I can't remember, but I think it was around age 10 or 11. And I was awestruck by the city itself. But I remember you mentioned John F. Kennedy. You mentioned Barack Obama. I was we were on a tour, and the tour guide was pointing us to a place called the Echo Chamber, and it has to do with an ellipse in the building where if you stand in one corner, one place on the floor in the building, you can hear someone way down 180 feet across from you whispering. It's called the Whispering Gallery because it's an ellipse. It's a mathematical thing. And they brought up the fact that John Quincy Adams, who I guess was a mathematician also, he used to stand there and talk with his colleagues and listen to his adversaries way on the other end of the building because of this whispering gallery. So you're talking about, you know, John Kennedy and Barack Obama, and immediately I thought of John Quincy Adams. I mean, that place is, I don't even know how to describe it, but it's not the cradle of liberty, but it's the symbol of liberty.
Yeah, and I've been to D.C. a number of times, and every time I go, I'm struck by so much. As you are with the ellipse, I am standing in so many different spots in D.C. where you can look down, and from just a couple of different views, you can see the monuments and the memorials and the buildings. And the way it was laid out, you know, if you go up to the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, a place of great reverence, just what is there and what it represents, and to have these individuals go and really defile that building. I saw in 60 Minutes last night, they did an interior tour with Speaker Pelosi, and to see the level of destruction was even just sickening. It was sickening. I don't know how else to describe
it. All right. Well, you mentioned a couple of things about the marathon sessions you had. Was it this week or last week? I'm so confused. I guess it was last week, right?
Yeah. So we've had we had a couple of weeks of some 12-hour days, and then on the very last night of the session, on Tuesday morning, going into Wednesday, we actually wrapped up at 4:45 a.m. and then within a couple hours of that, we had a Democratic caucus, and right after that, we got sworn into a new term. And as much of a grind as it was finishing up, I'm very proud of the work that we did in the last few hours of the session, some really significant legislation that we're able to pass.
Mention a couple of those things, if you would, please.
So I can come back to police reform, but in the waning hours of the session, we passed the climate resiliency and environmental bill that puts us on a roadmap to being a carbon-free society. The bill concerns a lot of pieces around what we call environmental justice, where if people take a look around and look at some of the heavy polluters, some of the companies, power stations, they were sited in areas where the residents really didn't have a lot of voice to try to fight these things or make them better. What this climate resiliency and environmentally friendly bill does, it really puts the emphasis on renewables, the solar, some incentives, green jobs. It really is a very, very good piece of legislation. The other two that I really think bear mentioning, there's a healthcare bill that we did, and it's an incredibly complex piece of legislation, but there are things in there that everyday residents of the Commonwealth will benefit from. For instance, these surprise billing that we hear about, if, you know, there are people that are coming out of surgery that, you know, they didn't realize that the anesthesiologist was out of network and they get a bill for $15,000, we'll be taking care of that. Some of these, some really difficult diseases, there's one in particular, the acronym is PANDAS, PANS, P-A-N-D-A-S, P-A-N-S. It's an immune disease that children are getting from strep throat, just causing incredibly difficult medical conditions. We are now putting that in the category that insurance companies will have to cover. We've increased the scope of practice for nurse practitioners, something I've been working on for a long time. Our medical folks during this whole COVID has done just incredibly heroic work, and this was an opportunity to recognize, and I really have to shout out to the nurse practitioners and nurse clinicians. The work that they've been doing, this bill recognizes that. It recognizes their education and allows them to practice as they should. And the last piece, and probably the most timely, is the economic development piece. We need to make an investment. We need to keep people working. I can tell you, in Salem, we're losing a restaurant every day or every other day. They're either closing or suspending operations. You know, if you look at some of the economies on the North Shore, I know that Gloucester would face this, Rockport, Salem. We have a heavy emphasis on tourism, hospitality, restaurants. These are the folks that are hurting tremendously, and what the economic development will do, really in the place of, and I will be critical here of the federal government, critical of the inaction at the federal level, where really there could have been a lot more aid that was sent to the local level. I think the state has done a very, very good job stepping in here and at least getting us as a bridge to some of the greater aid that we really do need. And I look at the gridlock in Washington, and I can tell you that our local federal representatives are working very hard. Our congressmen, our senators, Senator Warren, Senator Markey, but unfortunately they've run into some of this real partisan gridlock there. So I'm very hopeful going forward. Those are some really extraordinary pieces of legislation that I think that Massachusetts can be very proud of.
And that's all you got done last week? That's it?
That represents a lot of work.
I can imagine, yeah. Holy crow. And finally, Representative Tucker, I have talked with the Massachusetts State Minority, Senate Minority Leader Bruce Tarr about this, and as the police reform bill was being considered the last several months, of course he couldn't talk about it while it was, while it was being debated and so on. But at one point, I had asked him, has there been enough police representation in debating this? And his one word answer was no. How do you look at it as a former police chief now as to where it is? Because in my mind, the term defunding police is a horrible term to use, because I don't think anybody really means that. Well, I think what people mean, the good intention people, is that we want to make things better. Somehow, let's make things better. How do you look at it, Chief?
Yeah, a couple of different things, and this is a very complex question, but it's a very fair and good question. Well, let me say right off the top that Senator Tarr, as the minority leader in the Senate, did some extraordinary work. He was a member of the conference committee, and I'm going to tell you that with his work on this bill, I think the final piece came out even better. So I really want to send a lot of credit to Senator Tarr. He's very, very good on so many issues, but he was a particularly strong voice here. On the defund the police, clearly I would oppose defunding any police department. But I think that unfortunately, the term defund the police, really, we need to get beyond that, mm-hmm. and we look to see what can we do better, more efficiently, and with better outcomes. Now, does that mean that maybe we do some of the things that we did in Salem, where we have two clinicians that actually work on the streets with the police officers? That's not cutting one. It's not a zero-sum game where you've got to cut one to add to the other. I look at it actually as complementary, where you bring mental health professionals, the folks that are trained in a lot of what the police are doing now, that unfortunately it's come to this because a lot of this defaulted to the police by virtue of the fact that really, along with our brothers and sisters in the fire service, we're really the only 24/7 operation that people are going to call at 3 o'clock in the morning. Mm-hmm. And I think that rather than defund, I think we look to make investments and see what we can do to help police work smarter. And that's no knock on the police at all. The police are doing incredibly strong work. And as I said, a lot of these types of things have defaulted to the police because, frankly, nobody else is around to do it. And I think we need to look at all of these things.
Well,
the representation by the police, honestly, it could have been more. I think that we could have heard more voices. But let me put a caveat here, though. There were so many voices from so many different quarters, and all the voices here were important, whether they were from social justice advocates, whether they were from the minority community, which had an extremely important voice that had to be heard here. One of the things that I am most proud of in terms of my own involvement here, one, I was able to bring 34 years worth of experience, but what I'm most proud of is the work that I was able to do with the Black and Latino Legislative Caucus. We have a very, very strong, particularly in the House, strong leader in my good friend Representative Carlos Gonzalez, who's a classmate of mine in the House. What they brought to the table in terms of lived experiences was just incredible. And the bill, I think it's a good bill, and I stand behind my vote on it because of what the Black and Latino Legislative Caucus did. I think that our House leadership, the Senate leadership, and Governor Baker, I think everybody got together on this. And honestly, Rick, nobody's calling me celebrating, saying this is the 100% best bill they've ever seen. But I think there are pieces in there for a cause. If you don't want to call it a celebration, I think we can say it's cause for optimism.
Mm-hmm. Well, I like that. I like that. And thank you for that insight. That just reveals so much about the efforts of the legislature. And one thing I've always looked at in politics, the good side of politics, is the art of compromise. And it seems as though, at least here in Massachusetts, everybody does have a voice, at one time or another. Great to hear. Representative Tucker, anything else you want to mention before I let you go this time?
Yeah, so just that we're heading into a new session. We had the swearing in last week. Over the next few weeks, the leadership will be putting the committees together. And, I've got some priorities, getting people back to work, some economic stuff, some investment in education, I think particularly higher ed and the trades. I think that, if anything, this pandemic has pointed out the need. We need skilled tradesmen, plumbers, electricians, HVAC. Good jobs, good wages, and I think that those are all interrelated with good public policy. So I appreciate it, and I'm ready to get back to work.
That is State Representative Paul Tucker with MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore. This has been Connections, a podcast connecting you with news, newsmakers, sports, and entertainment voices all over the North Shore. Brought to you by Moynihan Lumber of Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, by the Institution for Savings, based in Newburyport, with branches throughout the region. Connect with Connections by emailing msonewsports@gmail.com.